Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Stop crime before it happens and help make your neighborhood safer with Ring. Go to ring.com/NSS and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS.
The new MacBook Pro is hot. Headphones that tune to your ears and picking a UPS. Live from the Twit Studios in beautiful Petaluma, California, it's the new Screensavers.
Hello, everybody. Episode 166 for Saturday, July 21st, 2018. I am Leo Laporte.
I am rumored to be Patrick Norton.
He is behind that beard, underneath that Kangol, inside that plaid shirt, Mr. Patrick Norton. Hello,
good
sir.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Welcome back. Your timing is impeccable. Patrick, of course, the host of Tech Thang.
Thank you.
But you spell it Thing, but you call it Thang.
T-E-K-T-H-I-N-G, TechThang.
.com.
AVXL, home theater audio podcast with Robert Herron.
Love that.
We have a lot of fun with that one. You and I were arguing before the show.
This Week in Computer Hardware with Ryan Schrute.
About this.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this in a second. This is the very warm, brand new MacBook Pro with the i9. First, I want to thank Lorenzo. You're from Switzerland, but are you Swiss? Because you don't sound Swedish at all.
I'm from the Pacific Northwest, but moved to
Basel. Beautiful Basel.
Moved to Basel.
Basel. And we have a big group in here. We got to say hello to everybody. Let me just get my cards here because there's a whole family, the Lancet family from St. Paul, Minnesota. Dad dragged them. Dad has the Darth Vader as a Dio de los Muertos character T-shirt. Gary and Deb from Tucson. Gary's the guy in the cowboy hat. Mm-hmm. And then you brought some friends, too. So we got a jam-packed crew here from St. Louis, Missouri, home of Steak and Shake. Is St. Louis known for anything else besides Steak and Shake?
Well, Anheuser-Busch.
Oh, I've heard of them.
Yeah, JDS Labs. JDS Labs is in Illinois. That's where they work.
That's who they are?
Headphone Amplifier DAC company. That's Nick and Jim.
Oh, nice. Big into DACs.
You are big into DAX.
I am big into DAX, but I don't have a JDS, so I'm going to have to pick one up. We have some big stuff coming up. As we mentioned, the MacBook Pro is here, and Patrick and I are going to get into a fist fight over whether it's a good purchase, because I'm the one who spent more than $4,000 for it.
I'm not saying it's not a good purchase. I'm just going to wait until we're actually talking about the laptop, because technically right now we are supposed to be talking about...
You're going to talk about headphones. I'm really excited about that.
I am. Actually, I have some luxury headphones for a change.
You got one with a strange thing inside it,
though.
I'm not putting that in my ear. It's got a little knob in
there. It's only kinky the first time. My San Francisco is showing there.
Uninterruptible power supplies or UPSs. You're kind of the expert on this. We've got a call for help.
Yeah. I used to live with six UPSs and six Mac 2 CIs, and you could always tell when all the little old ladies in the neighborhood in the part of Linden, New Jersey we lived in, when they all broke down on those hot August nights and turned on their ACs, because down the hallway I would hear like, meep, 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 and you would crawl down the hallway because the renders would take 24 hours for a single frame.
Why did you have six 2 CIs?
It was a business.
Okay.
Basically, because that's the fastest computers we could get.
And you had it.
We were rendering images, and to do a single, like the equivalent of like a 640 by 480 frame would take like 24 hours to render.
Or divide it by six. That's the idea of the sexy core. We're going to talk about the sexy core. We also need to get you a new phone, my friend.
Yes.
That iPhone 6 is looking super annuated.
You know, the problem really is that the compass no longer works. And it's pissing me off. Because I can't use my astronomy apps the easy way without the compass.
Oh, well, you really do need a new phone. Yeah. You might want to watch Jason's review of the new Motorola.
I think I'm looking at the G6, but the Play looks really good.
It was a very sweet phone. We haven't seen the Z3 yet, but Jason will have a review of that. And mailbag questions, too. But here are the top stories of the day. We're not going
to... Well, we should talk about the...
We're not going to... We'll fix it in post, he said. We're not going to talk about Amazon Prime.
I was trying to decide if I should say that. Well, actually, we did a poll in the audience, and one hand out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 went up.
Although...
One person cared.
I had an O. Henry moment on Amazon Prime Day because I saw 40% off on Tupperware storage containers, like the 8,000-piece kit. So I bought it, and then the funniest thing...
Your life partner.
My life partner and wife, Lisa, saw the same deal and bought it too. So now we have a lifetime
supply of Tupperware.
Can I give you some Tupperware?
Absolutely. We're always canning food at my place. More things to freeze pasta sauce.
We'll be canning. It was a big Prime Day, even though Amazon servers went down. Which was like, what? You guys didn't expect some traffic?
Well, they expected some traffic, but every time they do this, they're like, we blew another record through the roof. We destroyed. Oh, well.
Here's the one that's set my brain on fire. A big voting machine company. You know, and this was the...
It's okay.
How hot is it?
98.
Oh, point.
Go ahead. You start talking. I'll call it out.
The big voting machine company.
Oh, 99.
The throbbing temple.
108.
This is the company that makes the machines, not the ones you vote on.
No.
This makes machines that takes all the votes and counts them. So this is like...
That doesn't sound important.
No. So they put... It turns out they didn't tell anybody, but they put remote access software on the voting machines so they could service them, right? And then it turns out what they put on there was PC Anywhere. And then it turns out, according to Motherboard... That right about that time frame, 2006, PC Anywhere source code was stolen by hackers. Now, I don't know what a hacker would do with source code, but...
Perhaps create the ability to access it at will and manipulate the incredibly... who cares? Votes. What do votes determine the future of America?
There's two things wrong with this story.
Actually,
three, because... check me now. Symantec
111
didn't admit for 6 years that the source code had been stolen. We only found that out in 2012.
Okay, I would like to personally say, on behalf of me and everyone I know in InfoSec, just as a I can't say that phrase on a family-friendly show.
No, you can say it on Tech Thang.
No, I can't say it there either because people turn purple and get really upset. Do me a favor. If you're running a Norton product, just replace it with something else right now.
There's video
because
somewhere.
Because if you're going to have that big a hole and just be like, oh,
no,
we've known about this for 6 years.
And whatever you do, don't put it on voting machines. But see, there's two problems with that because in order for remote access software to work, you have to have the voting machine on the internet. No voting machine should be on the freaking internet.
Everything should be on the internet,
Leo.
It
should be air-gapped, right?
No. Everything should be on the internet. It's the 21st century.
Anyway,
it's the internet of voting machines.
Senator Wyden sent him a note. That's what happens when you do something wrong in this country now. You'll get a note from a senator.
One of the things that was floating around on Twitter this week, kind of in response to this and some other things, if you are, for example, an incredibly smart kind of techie person, for example, in the Bay Area, and you're going to spout off with your brilliant ideas, maybe... Just maybe volunteer, become a poll worker, work in the elections, work in a volunteer, learn how the systems actually work, become a part of the process, and then have some intelligent ideas to fix it.
Yeah.
Because
but don't put remote access software on the recounting machine.
Well, but that's part of the problem is in so many cases, these machines.
Come on in, guys. Just log in. You can change the votes.
We did it to facilitate upgrades.
They
did. How many upgrades have you offered? Well, we've never actually had an upgrade.
That's actually right. Another story. Google.
I was just being sarcastic.
Google with a record fine. How much money does Google make? How long would it take them to come up with $5 billion for the EU? I'm thinking they made more than that last week. But anyway, that's still a pretty big hefty fine. The EU says that Google did three things that they don't like. Number one, they've been bundling their search engine and Chrome apps into the operating system. Number two, they've prevented phone makers from both creating Google Services versions of Android and the Google Service-less version of Android, the open source one. And number three, they paid large manufacturers and mobile network operators to exclusively bundle the Google Search app on handsets. Seems to me, by the way, they stopped doing that third one in 2014 when they heard that the EU was pissed.
Okay.
They said, okay, we won't do that anymore. Seems to me that if consumers, don't we want the Google Play Store and the Google Chrome browser on our Android phones?
I'm sorry, are you suggesting we would want the things that actually make it useful to be installed on the device?
And it seems like Google's getting in trouble because they open sourced Android and they allow people to use it for free. If you use it for free, you can't use the Google stuff. Apple doesn't open source iOS. Apple, I'm sure, has a pretty penny for somebody to use iOS. Oh, wait a minute. They don't use iOS. You have to make... Only Apple can use iOS. And by the way, does Apple bundle their browser? Oh yeah, they do. App Store? Oh, yeah,
Are you trying to suggest that there may be some, what I will affectually call, curious logic at work?
I think there's some anti-Google sentiment in the EU is what
I
think.
Well, so two quick thoughts. One, Jerry held up sign. Google made $110 billion last year. In 2016...
Last year?
I want to say, like, or the... Said 2017. In 2016, Google was making $58 million a day.
Okay.
And at the 2016 rate, that would be 86 days to pay off
$5 billion. That's a whole quarter down the tubes.
Yeah.
You're ignoring
the cash reserves that Google has squirreled away.
Google says we're going to, of course, appeal it. They only have 90 days to fix it. And I think, pending appeal, they can put this off, but... The EU has different rules, so on. Maybe we should ask Lorenzo. Maybe he could.
That was a great facial reaction.
I don't know. Switzerland's not in the EU?
Neutral.
I did not know that. Yeah. I did not. Is Montenegro in the EU? All right. We're going to screw the news. We're going to move on to very hot topic in just a second. How hot is it?
111.5.
When does it break? It's not good for processors to be hot.
They don't break per se.
Do they fry?
They throttle down.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna talk about that in just a second because there have been some wild accusations flying back and forth about Apple's new MacBook Pros, and we will talk a little bit about why I'm not concerned, but Patrick's livid.
It's all about your user profile, how you use the machine.
But first, I want to talk about my doorbell. I had a great call on the radio show just a few hours ago from a mailman, mail carrier, she's a woman. And she said, "My mail, everywhere I go, I see these Ring video doorbells." Mm-hmm. So I got one. But she was sad because she doesn't have any internet access. So I was helping her get internet access, which you should. You shouldn't buy an Internet of Things device if you don't have internet access. But
True.
If you do... There's a good reason everybody's got these Ring video doorbells. They're awesome. She says, I love it. I can go up to the door, and people would talk to me. They would say, hey, I'm in Hawaii right now, but can you just put the package behind the bush there, and I'll pick it up, or I'll keep an eye on it when the package is on the porch. The Ring video doorbell lets you know when anybody comes up your walk because it's got motion sensors. It actually is connected. It is your doorbell, so when they ring the doorbell, you get a little chime on your phone no matter where you are anywhere in the world. You can see and talk to anybody at your door. I love it. And now Ring has expanded their line. They've got the Ring floodlight and spotlight cam. So basically, it's a Ring video doorbell minus the doorbell, and they've replaced the doorbell with two very nice bright LED spotlights. So for years you've had those things. They're motion activated as you walk behind the house. The lights come on, down by the garbage, and you could, the raccoons are supposed to run away. But now,
maybe
now,
in the neighborhood.
Now the lights come on, but also the camera says, "Hey, mm-hmm. something's going on," and you can see and hear and talk to those raccoons or the bad guy. And if it is a bad guy and he's not getting out of there, you press a button and 110 decibel alarm, and this light goes. Woo, woo, woo. This is awesome.
Our friend Ryan Trout actually. Had his go off at the office.
Yeah.
And it turned out there were a group of young people drinking beer in his parking lot. And he spoke to them. And he said the downside was that they ran away so fast they threw their beer cans up in the air and he had to pick them up the next day.
If you go to ring.com, the Twitter site, twitter.com/ring, and you take a look at their Twitter feed, there's all these great videos of things like that. People running away, package thieves getting caught in the act. Sometimes it's benign things. I really love having a Ring doorbell and the Ring spotlight cams around our house. I can see everything. Even, yeah, we check from time to time to see if the cats have come in yet. You can do it all. Here's the deal. I've got a special deal for you. The Ring of Security Kit. If you go to ring.com/NSS, you can get yourself a Ring doorbell and one, two, or three of these floodlight cams and up to $150 off.
Nice.
Again, ring.com/NSS. You know, we've had, and we love her on the show from time to time, Brianna Wu. You know, mm-hmm. Brianna, yeah, very well. She's running for Congress. And she's had some problems with harassment, people throwing bricks through her window and stuff. So we just sent her three of these Ring. We got her a Ring of Security Kit. We sent her the Ring spotlights. We sent her the Ring doorbell to just help her be a little safer. It is a great way to protect your home. Ring.com/NSS. Patrick's now watching. He's watching you with his Ring. I love Ring. Ring's the thing. All right, let's talk. This now, you and I might have a little disagreement. Maybe not on
this. So, okay. Go ahead. 2018 15-inch MacBook.
This is expensive. Apple announced new MacBook Pros, and
they're very expensive.
They range in price from $1,800. You could, if you loaded it up, get all the way up to $7,000. Most of that's because they now offer a 4 terabyte SSD.
I was going to say, I was shocked at the restraints you showed by actually not maxing out with the 4 terabyte SSD.
I didn't max it out. I decided to get a 1 terabyte SSD, but I've been waiting for i9 laptops, and there are a couple of them out already. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are more to come. This is an Intel chip that is kind of an odd chip. It's an 8th generation chip. That means it's what, Coffee Lake? I think it's Coffee Lake.
Let's not even.
Basically, it's a little bit of a Xeon. Somebody's selling, right?
Well, it's frustrating because it seems like they've smeared
Intel's having a hard time getting to 10 nanometers.
Yeah.
So what they've done, and it, you know what? I think we're really getting close to the end of
they've
Moore's
done
law.
Everything they can.
But one of the things, the previous Apple laptops had 2-core i5s and 7s and 3 and 6, 2-core and 4-cores. Mm-hmm. This is the first time they had a 6-core. So by adding more cores, you get more performance, right? But you also get a lot more heat. These processors, the i9 in here, are, like all of the modern Intel processors, speed step driven. That means the clock speed goes up and down depending on demand. In this case, the nominal speed is 2.9 gigahertz, and it'll go all the mm-hmm. way up to 4.2, I think, or 4.3 if needed. Now, I'm giving you an example right now. I'm running on this a bunch of things. I'm watching a Netflix video. I've got a little handbrake going. Should I just run the little handbrake compressor here? Well, actually, I'm not going to do that quite yet. The main reason I got this is because Lightroom was so slow for me loading raw images that I Right. couldn't really go through my raw images. It has made a big difference. And look, I have running and what Intel calls a power gadget. By the way, they pulled this down, the power gadget. Let me move it a little bit over so you can read it. You can't download the Mac version of this anymore. And that started last night. No one's sure exactly why. Maybe they don't want YouTubers to be doing anything with it. I don't know. Maybe there's something wrong with it. But as you can see, the bar on this power gadget is the nominal speed of 2.9 gigahertz. It's running right now 3.75. And as I do things, as I run through images and so forth, it'll go up and down a little. But it's staying above the line. And this is what I'm looking for. I'll run my compiler, too. I have a little program I wrote that goes through the dictionary and counts the most frequent letters. It takes about half a minute to run. As it's running, again, you can see the core's going up. It's throwing a little juice at that. The power consumption's going up.
Yeah.
The temperature's also going up. 99 degrees is about the most you'd ever want Celsius out of a processor. Any hotter than that,
yeah,
that's boiling water, kids.
Back in the day, right, we used to have issues with literally frying processors. We would overheat the processor.
So they don't want to go that fast.
Well, they don't. What happens now is that when the processor gets to a certain point, it goes, too hot, and it throttles back down.
Right.
And part of what's interesting about this Coffee Lake processor, this Core 9 processor, is one of the things they'll do is, it's TVB, which is kind of like the next jump past Turbo Boost. And the idea is that thermal velocity boost will allow you to bump up 200 megahertz in clock cycles to take care of opportunistic or to basically throw power at problems, but only if the the processor is at 50 degrees Celsius or below.
You don't want to get too hot. You want to protect the processor.
What's you know, you're not actually doing a lot of work. What temperature is your processor running
at
again?
Like I said, it got to 99. Right now it's at 90 degrees Celsius. But notice it is running, and this is my point here. It is running at 3.9 gigahertz. It's running above its rated speed. It is doing what I wanted it to do. It's compiling about as fast as an iMac Pro.
Okay.
It is running through my RAWs. It is at the same time running a video. Now, when Dave Lee did his review on YouTube, he was compressing for 30 minutes a Premiere Pro that used the GPU and the CPU 100%, and he noticed that the processor slowed down because it got hot, right?
Right.
That's called throttling due to heat, and it's what the processor is supposed to do to protect itself.
Yes.
The question people ask, and this is, I think that, you correct me if I'm wrong, but to me the fundamental question
is where the fighting starts.
Is it worth the money? Am I, in my day-to-day use, going to get a faster processor?
Right.
Is it going to give me what I need? And as a photographer, it does. It gives me a lot better performance on a pig of a program called Lightroom. On the other hand, if what you want to do is a lot of rendering in Premiere Pro, you're not going to get your money's worth. It's actually going to be slower than an i5 processor.
So one of the things, and what's interesting about this with the Core i9 is some Dell customers have complained, some gamers have complained on Reddit. We've got the complaints about this.
And this is nothing new. I've seen this with i7s and Lenovo's last year and things like that.
And it's been a problem with a lot of basically, the thinner the laptop is, the less thermal capacity the laptop has.
And this is thin.
Especially if it's a fanless laptop. Like, the worst ones are some of the Surface Books.
This does have a fan, but it doesn't have much of a vent. Yeah. This is the vent right here, right below the screen. And Apple is really prioritizing aesthetics here. I agree with you.
Yeah,
and they are selling these at a premium price for a professional user who wants more power.
So what would be interesting for me is if you had the 2.2 gigahertz one that was considerably less expensive, would that deliver the same performance boost that you are feeling with your Lightroom
application? Well, it's not rated to go up to 4 gigahertz, which this one is. Mm-hmm. So I am, as you can see here, living. Now, let me show you what's going to happen. The minute I run, I already am. The minute I run Handbrake, look at that. It is now below its nominal, and it's going to go up and down. That's because it's getting hot. And the processor, it's really getting work. Now, it didn't do it right away.
Right.
It took about 30 seconds.
Part of what happens is,
so for bursty kinds of activities like reviewing photos, compiling software.
Small compiles.
Well, if it's a half an hour, but you know,
I mean, I have friends that do actually regularly on almost a daily basis run compiles that take 15 to 45 minutes.
Well, one thing you're going to notice is they're going to take less time.
Yes.
And I
hopefully
think that I think that most of the time we're doing incremental compiles that aren't that long. If you have to rebuild the whole thing, that's true. The author of Geekbench, for instance, one of the big benchmark utilities, did a batch 10 times he compiled Geekbench, and he was able to get this same throttling here.
Mm-hmm.
But no one is going to compile the same program 10 times in a row.
But one of the cases I ran into, a friend of mine spent $3,200 on a new mic. I want to say a Surface Book. Right? And he was like, this is really slow. I'm like, what do you mean it's really slow? You know, it's got the fastest processor. It had 16 or 32 gigabytes, right? It was a well-configured machine. But because it got so badly thermally saturated so quickly, I actually had a two-year-old $1,500 laptop that would outperform it.
That's the question, is are you getting your money's worth? And I think to some degree it depends on what you're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, you can see now the kind of flapping that Dave Lee was seeing. And tell us what the temperature on the outside is. That's one thing you will notice. This laptop gets fairly hot both in your lap and at the keyboard.
Well, that's actually down. It's only 112.
Yeah. You know why? Because it's not running at full speed.
Yeah.
And that's the key.
We had it up to 150. The keyboard was up to 115 degrees before.
Right. For the kind of bursty work I do, photography, compiling, running movies, in fact, multiple processes at once, it's been great. It's been running well above the nominal speed. When you're doing something like Handbrake or Final Cut, I'll actually stop this. Or Premiere. Now, I have a little bit of a question of how well Premiere is optimized. Let's just add a curiosity. Now, by the way, notice as soon as I stopped Handbrake, the CPU immediately down. Went right back up to above rated to almost 4 gigahertz. It's now at 3.74.
I'm always curious.
As soon as it's not thermally, it's very quick to respond.
One of the things that's difficult when a new processor comes out, but when a new laptop comes out, is you probably don't have access to all the different configurations. And it would be a very interesting story to me if someone, you know, went through and took a look at the difference, the 2.2 gigahertz, the 2.6 gigahertz, the Core i7, the Core i9, and looked at the performance of all of those.
So I'm now doing a Final Cut transcode.
Mm-hmm.
It does jump up immediately to a higher speed.
Mm-hmm.
We're over 4 gigahertz right now. I expect, though, as the thermals go up, the temperature goes up, that the speed will go down and protect the chip. So, but for 15 or 20 seconds, we're getting a considerable improvement in speed. There's one other thing I'd point out. This has a discrete GPU, a Radeon 560 in it, but you can buy for an additional $700. And I guess my point also, this parenthetically, professionals are willing to spend more because these are work tools for them.
Yes.
So they may say, you know what, I'm going to max this out. I'm going to get the eGPU. I'm going to get an iMac Pro. I'm going to get whatever I need because I make money on this. But let's disconnect right now. I'm going to disconnect the Thunderbolt or the HDMI, and I'm going to connect the eGPU. One of the neat things about this eGPU is as soon as you connect it, it goes in. It's a 580. It's a considerably faster, and I'll take the HDMI and put it in here. It also becomes a dock, right? So it's got USB and all that stuff.
While we're talking about the MacBook Pro, we should also point out you cannot upgrade the hard drive on this.
You can't upgrade anything on this.
You cannot upgrade the GPU in this.
You can't upgrade this. Although, for $700, you get a nice-looking dock.
Yeah.
You get... And this gets fairly hot fairly quickly, too. I don't know if I see any benefit from it, but what I do
you might
notice...
You might have to restart the run to actually...
I will restart because it's done, and we never did... This was a short enough, you know, under a minute transcoding, or render, I guess it is, in Final Cut. We never did really have to gate it down. Let me run it one more time and see what happens now with the eGPU. Oh. It's still doing something. Maybe I'm not done. I thought I was. On the line, we got somebody who actually probably knows a little bit more about this than I do anyway. Mike Worthley is here from Apple Insider. And I saw recently, Mike, today on Apple Insider, you were performing similar tests. Tell us what you were discovering.
We're doing much the same thing that you're doing right there, and we're doing it with Final Cut Pro, we're doing it with Premiere, we're doing it with a bunch of other professional applications. You know, I'm going to tap my eGPU right here.
That's a real one. That's one that you can upgrade.
Well, there are pros and cons of both of that. This is much louder.
Yeah, this is virtually silent. Yeah.
I mean, I can hear it right now, and I've got everything in shutdown quiet mode for the show here.
Right.
So what we're running into is conditions where if there isn't a momentary pause like you're seeing in your Final Cut Pro rendering, then the processors are getting way too hot, and they're throttling way below the advertised speed that Apple says the machine can deliver.
I've seen it
2.9 speed.
Yeah, I've seen it go down to just about a gigahertz. I mean, really slow.
Right. What I'd seen while you were running your last run on your power gadget there is about 2.2, and we were seeing about the same thing when we were using Cinebench 15.
Okay.
Now, we wrote about this on Wednesday, and there's been a lot of developments since then. John Poole, like you had mentioned, has already started talking about this again. He took a lot of flack about Geekbench unfairly, I think, in regards to this. I think, Patrick, I think you're right in many respects, and I think, Leo, you are as well. A lot of this depends on your workflow and what you're going to do with the machine. I think that if you know that you've got a four-hour video render, I think that you need to take that money that you're making after you've done that four-hour video render and get something like an iMac Pro.
I agree.
Or the Mac Pro that's coming next year at some point.
Although I have to say, some of the things I do, like the compile and run of that code, was almost as fast on this as it is on my 10-core iMac Pro. So this is
a
nice machine if you're having portability. I know, Patrick. Hold on. He's going to burst a vessel. If portability is important, the point is these are all things you have to weigh. But what you don't want to do is get ripped off.
I mean, the way we fixed this back in the day was leaving Final Cut, moving to Premiere, and running Windows systems because I can buy a very, very fast gaming laptop with a very, very loud fan and what may be questionable aesthetics that will actually run that has the thermal capacity to keep the processor running at the maximum speed. Because there are situations, I don't want to carry a desktop and a monitor to CES. I don't want to carry a desktop and a monitor to a field shoot. And that's what's frustrating is you know.
I'd say if you're a photographer and Lightroom is an issue for you because it's a big, this has been a boon for me. And you can see now that it's just running Lightroom. It's running at 3.7 gigahertz. It's running well above. But as soon as I start doing the render on here, we're going to do it again. Watch what happens. Now, this is with the eGPU, so I'm curious to see if the eGPU makes any difference.
It's not going to, right now, unless you run a script called set eGPU, the eGPU is going to do nothing for you in Final Cut Pro.
Now, that's a big deal. Why is that? Is it using the internal GPU?
I wish I had a solid answer for you on that. It does appear that Final Cut Pro is mostly CPU bound at this point. It does hit the GPU on occasion. I do expect that there's going to be improvements to this in Mojave regarding how they handle eGPUs. There's been a lot of changes in the beta in regards to that. But do look up that set eGPU. What it does is it'll look across your system and activate eGPU support explicitly for everything you have to use it.
It's supposed to be turned on in High Sierra. You're absolutely right, Mike. It did not change the core performance at all.
It looks it's exactly a great dock, and you can play games with it.
Well, that's why should I get the eGPU then? Where will I see a benefit?
What we are seeing in some of our testing is if you are doing your graphics offload on what you're going to see now is the back of my monitor that I'm looking at here. If you're doing a lot of work on that with eGPU, instead of loading up your GPU on your machine, you're loading up that instead, and you're improving the thermals just in that regard.
Let me try Handbrake. Do you think it will take advantage of the eGPU? Because that was what was really flapping.
Handbrake can. There's a couple of settings you'd have to delve into, and I don't have the exact location of those settings right now. But you can use GPU processing on some builds of Handbrake. I don't remember if it's in the release or the nightly builds.
Look at the clock speed. It's the second window down. It's going down, baby. We're going down.
But that's what happens when you
look at the temperature. 99. Yeah. It's going to keep it. If it goes above 100, I'm selling this computer.
Oh,
it's going
to
keep it. The whole job of the Intel core.
It dropped the frequency down to 2 gigahertz.
Yeah, it's to keep it under 100. That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, which is great. Exactly what the processor is supposed to do. Right. But wouldn't it be nice, since you paid how much for this laptop?
$4,000
Wouldn't it be nice for $4,000, they put maybe a little bit more fan in there, or maybe just... a little more room to move air over the processor.
That's really the question is, Apple, you knew you were going to have a very hot situation inside here. Why didn't you do something about this?
Well, honestly, I think that they took Intel's promises in 2015 when they were designing this chassis to heart. And they said, well, we're going to be at 10 nanometer in 2 years. Don't worry about it. We're going to have much lower.
And they aren't, are they? No.
And they're not.
Yeah.
So Apple
this is still 14, still 14 nanometers.
Apple took heat for 16 gigabytes of RAM in 2016 because Intel wasn't supporting LPDDR4 at the time, Apple decided it wanted to go with that RAM instead of DDR4. And now they've rectified that with a larger battery and DDR4 and a memory controller in the machine you're using right there. So I think Apple takes their manufacturers at face value, and when Intel promises them something, they expect they're going to get it.
They're learning a lesson. In fact, this just confirms what everybody suspects, which is that Apple eventually is going to go to their own processors and not rely on Intel for this.
I see that coming. Some of my colleagues at Apple Insider are not of the same view I am on that, and I it's a contentious subject.
Yeah.
But you got to remember that Apple's done this twice before. Patrick was talking about a 2CI. Not much later than that, they shifted to PowerPC, and another 12 years after that, they shifted to Intel. So
I still remember when they shifted to Intel. It was one of the last press conferences I was invited to before
mayhem.
The two of us managed to upset Apple and get off the list. But when I thought it was a terrible idea.
Obviously, it was the right thing to do.
Well, yeah, but when Steve made that announcement, there was just like, literally, like people around me, hundreds of people around me, it was just like they'd been gut punched.
Well, remember, Apple had spent the last 4 years saying why PowerPC was better than
Intel. Apple had spent the last 4 years manipulating benchmarks to prove that their RISC processor was outperforming Intel until they did the big switch.
So, Mike,
yes.
Bottom line this for us. What should somebody consider? Is it a bad idea to buy this?
I don't think it is. The i9 and the i7 machines do have significant gains over the 2017 model and a lot of gains over the 2016 model. What I'm actually recommending to people right now is the 32 gigabytes of RAM, you know if you need it, and if you don't think you need it, then you don't. Right. eGPUs I love, and I have loved for years, and they do a lot in a mobile environment where I can pack up this machine, I can run down into DC, do what I've got to do with the planning commission or whatever, looking at the next Apple store, and then I can come back and hook it up back to the eGPU, and I've got a horde of 4K monitors around me connected to that eGPU, one cable to everything. So what I'm suggesting to people is just do that, is go the eGPU route. If you think you need the i9, then get the i9. Most people don't. I think you would probably have the same luck going through the HEVC files with the i7, with the 6-core i7. This is totally work case. This is comes completely down to use case.
Right, right.
Do you think there's a possibility? I mean, because
notice, by the way, all 6 cores, 100%. Thanks.
No, I have no doubt.
They're being used heavily.
I mean, this is also a situation I'm in constantly, where you're in production mode, you're trying to get videos out, and I've seen, I've seen laptops that have really bad thermal solutions, you know, take 1.5 times as long as considerably slower laptops to render a file because of the thermal issues. I'm curious, Mike, given that it took so long to get what I will affectionately call modern processors inside the MacBook Pro line, mm-hmm. is there any chance they're going to do any redesign in the next year or two to adjust the thermals or to upgrade the thermals on this?
If you look back at the history of MacBook Pro case redesigns, you had the original design for the PowerBook G4, which evolved slightly into the Intel PowerBook. And then you looked at, then they went to the unibody, and now they went to the Retina MacBook Pro. So they get about 6 or 7 years out of each individual case design.
Right.
So I don't think we're going to see another improvement in this unless Intel says, again, they say, well, you know, gee, we're really sorry, and we're not going to make it for another X number of years. So these take a long time to gear up. We didn't get the first indication of the case redesign on the 2016 until April of 2016 was the first time we saw any sign of it out of China. And we're just not seeing anything even resembling a case redesign out of any of Apple's partners at all.
So interestingly, Handbrake does not use the GPU, mm-hmm. either internal or external at all. As soon as I stopped Handbrake, you see that the processor jumped up, but then as soon as I launched Final Cut, it dropped down again. Now it's coming back up as the thermals go away. Let me confirm that Final Cut is not using the GPU. We're going to redo this render here real quickly.
Laptops are pretty brutal environments for CPUs because they have all of this stuff wrapped very, very tightly around the CPU. Right. So as you thermally saturate the laptop, everything around it gets hotter and hotter and hotter.
The 580 is spinning up with Final Cut a little bit. And you see, as it spins up, maybe it's done now. Yeah, I guess it's done now.
It does hit the eGPU. I expect it will hit the eGPU more come Mojave in the next revision.
Okay. And I'll get that. Tell me again the name of the program we should download.
Well, there's a couple you should actually look at. There's set-egpu, which is a script, and you'd have to look it up. I don't have the URL handy right now. And there's another one that I'm starting to mess with, so I'm giving a little bit of a preview. If you do read Apple Insider, I'm starting to mess with a program called Volta.
Volta.
Which allows you to control the maximum power the chip can use, and it'll also control the voltage on the chip.
Interesting.
I'm going to say right now that this is not something that you just want to mess with because you can cause yourself massive problems.
Oh.
And if you are, do it very carefully and very slowly and read what you're doing before you do it, because I guarantee you that if you do something permanent, you are not going to get a warranty fix on this.
Let me state it bluntly. Mike's saying if you break it using Volta, it's your fault. It's not his fault. It's not Apple Insider's fault. It's not our fault. It's your fault. You own that one.
And I'll give a little plug. This is the Intel Power Gadget. You can't download it right now, and no one's clear why Intel took it off the site. And then I've also been using something you can download and install, and I recommend, called iStat Menu, and that's giving us the individual core performance and the eGPU performance. It's actually a nice little program.
Can we ask one question before you go?
Yeah, absolutely.
If we have sort of an A11, A12, A13, whatever it is, or whatever name Apple comes up with it, powered laptop to replace the Intel processors, when do you see that coming? I mean, obviously, it's complete conjecture, but...
Like with 2016, you've got to get the developers on board first.
Okay.
So we're going to get the first indication. I think we've already had the first indication. I think the first indication we had that this is being considered was this last WWDC, where they announced the frameworks that were previously called Marzipan. in some other reports, where you could easily convert iPad apps to the Mac. I think that's the first step. I think that's the first step in getting developers to move over to these new frameworks that are going to make things easier. This isn't going to be a situation where one day Tim Cook comes out on stage and says, hey, look, a new Mac Mini, and it now has the A15 or whatever in it.
Right.
So the earliest I think this could happen is 2020, and I think it's going to happen at the low end, and it's only going to happen at the high end when people start screaming about it.
Very interesting. Makes Mike sense. Worthley from AppleInsider.com. We'll watch with interest your continued measurements on this. I take it you're not done, that there'll be more to talk about.
Oh, there's more to come.
Yeah. I guess, again, the bottom line is this isn't necessarily a bad purchase for the right use cases. It would be a dumb thing to do if what you want to do is long renders, long compiles, something that's going to be solidly blocking out that processor for length of time. You're not going to get the full throughput.
Yeah, be aware of your thermal conditions all the time. If you're using this on a blanket, you're probably making a mistake.
So do not use it on a blanket.
It just consider what you've got your machine rested on when you're doing these long processing. And consider, you're right, you're talking about that vent there. It is very small. And consider what's there.
Yeah.
And if you bring these machines into the Apple store periodically and say, hey, look, I need the dust cleaned out of this. Can you do this? Make the appointment, and they will do it for you while the machine is under warranty.
No kidding.
And that's good preventative maintenance to get done.
That's a very good
Nothing
thing
worse than finding half a cat and half pound of goose down inside of your $4,000
laptop.
These
fans are an inch and a quarter across. It doesn't take much for it to start making a little bit of noise, and then you have a problem with airflow, and then you've got a real problem.
I did go out and buy the Apple Fan Control program, not an expensive program. Don't waste your money. Apple's automatic controls do as good a job, maybe better, than anything you might do by
one would
hand.
Hope.
Yes.
For now, stick with that. That's my recommendation as well. Don't go messing with fan speeds right now.
Don't go messing.
let's get a little bit more information out in the field first, and then we can figure out what the situation is.
And there is a real-world consequence to all of this. It's hot. The keyboard is hot. This is hot, even in normal operation. The fans go on very early. They're fairly loud.
It's down 8 degrees.
It's 107 degrees on my home row. And you're going to hear those fans right away. So if you don't like fan noise, if you don't want to type on a warm keyboard, this may not be right for you either. Thank you so much, Mike Worthley from Apple Insider.
Anytime. You know how to get me.
Yeah, thanks. Come back. We will. We'll have you back. So one of the things, of course, iFixit does immediately, as soon as they can get one, is tear down this wall. They tear down the MacBook Pro. We talked earlier this week to Samantha Lionheart about the iFixit teardown and what they found. Watch.
So I'm Sam Lionheart. I'm the lead teardown engineer here at iFixit. I'm in charge of the teardowns and the guides. So we're kind of the team that broke this crazy membrane story wide open. Initially, we were just expecting this to be an ordinary spec bump kind of teardown. So we did try to test the quieter keyboard, this third generation keyboard, and didn't really hear like a solid sound difference. It seemed like you were getting a little bit less of the clacky and it was more of a deeper tone. But we really didn't even think to pull the keys off until much later. Our video team popped off a key and they found that weird silicone membrane. So we're like, okay, wow, we really have to look into this. So once we did do the initial teardown, we just went kind of hog wild and tore down the full keyboard itself and found that that membrane was one solid sheet. So we went ahead and did some testing to see if, while we couldn't tell if it was definitely quieter, which is what Apple claimed was the reasoning for that upgrade, we were able to prove like definitively that it's much more ingress proof. And ingress proofing is the dust proofing, getting those particles to stay out of the sensitive butterfly mechanism. So we used kind of a glowing paint additive to try and show where these things were spreading around. And for the most part, in the silicon sleeve, they are piling up around the edges. So that was protecting the internal butterfly mechanism. And when we added dust to the previous generation that doesn't have that protection, it went instantly kind of underneath the clips and the keys themselves. So you could see that definitely was going to help prevent the keys from binding up. That silicone layer did add a little bit extra space in there. So the keycaps are slightly smaller. And we're thinking that that's either for the silicone membrane to give more room there. It might also help take the keys off without damaging them. They have a little bit more access. So that might prevent kind of the key breaking as you're taking it off to clean it, which has been a struggle, as well as the key binding issue. At iFixit, we're always finding new news. Like just today, we found out that there's some black paint in this keyboard to help diffuse the LEDs. So I guess keep checking in to these teardowns as they come out. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and you guys can always submit guides to iFixit or fix the mistakes that we've made in our guides. We are an open platform wiki repair guide, so we welcome everyone.
Thank you, Sam. Sam Lionheart, best name ever. She's the teardown expert at iFixit. Of course, iFixit is a sponsor of many of our shows. They also found that they had not changed the cooling subsystem at all. You know, those special fans that Apple was going so on and on about 3 years ago. They're still in there. Same thing.
Quiet keyboard.
Yeah, I like the keyboard a little bit better.
We fixed that loud keyboard.
It's not that it's loud, because that never bothered me. It's a little clickety-clackety, but it feels a little softer to the touch.
Well, that makes sense, though. They've put
a little rubber
bushing in there.
Bushing.
You know.
Yeah. I'm running a motion project right now. This is one that took, overnight to render on an older Mac Pro. And you see, it isn't maxing out the CPU. It's maxing out the GPU. But here's a weird thing. Right now, it's maxing out the internal GPU and not touching the eGPU. Earlier, it was. So I don't know what the hell's going on here. Intel says, though, it is running above nominal clock speed, about 3.5 gigahertz. So it's not CPU bound. It's not too hot. It's only 94 Celsius.
A mere
94 Celsius.
A balmy.
It's maxing out the GPU inside. You shouldn't use the external. Use the external. I bought this for you. That's yours. Use it.
You might want to run the script.
Maybe I
have to. Because Siri, she doesn't always listen to what I say.
It should know. It should just know. Yeah. It should know.
Mac. It just works.
It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I went there.
It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not working. Thank you. I fix it. You want to talk about headphones?
Why not?
Whenever Patrick's here, I kind of use him as my headphone expert.
I feel so used.
I remember back in the day when you told me to buy those Grados. You've gone far beyond Grado, right?
Yeah, my lifestyle is unhinged at this point.
I do have, and I like those, what are they called?
The
Hi-Fi Man Planar. Is it Planar Magnetics?
Planar Magnetics.
I like those.
You need to hear the new ones, the Aeon from Mr. Speakers.
How much are those?
$800.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's
not bad.
But how many times have you changed your flagship phone this year? How many times? How many phones?
No, I am still with the iPhone 10. I haven't left the iPhone 10.
Whoa, time out. I would just this is a big moment. You've had this phone for how long?
Well, I've had others. I had the Xiaomi P20 and I had the Samsung Note 8, and then I had the Samsung S9 Plus, and then I had the Pixel 2 XL. But I really like that iPhone 10. I've had that since it came out in September. So it's been
approximately
9 months.
Okay, so you've had this one phone for 9 months. And another $3,200
okay,
in flagship
others.
Phones, assuming you didn't max out the configurations on those. So what I'm saying is Leo, you can swing a world-class pair of headphones made
but
in
I
San
like
Diego,
the
California.
Hi-Fi Mans.
But you might like these better.
Really?
Yeah, actually.
All right.
But
I have the Sennheisers. We're going to talk wireless.
Yeah, we're
so
not talking about...
How much, first of all, of a sacrifice am I making going from wired to wireless?
Okay, so a couple of years ago, I would have been like...
Yeah, I really don't like what Bluetooth does.
Yeah. Well, what's nice about it is there's a bunch of things going on. If you're on the iPhone, it's basically the shortest going down a rabbit hole that I can get is if you are in an incredibly quiet environment and you are listening to your FLAC files and or Tidal.
The
uncompressed audio, and you're a critical listener, you may still prefer a wired headphone. For the vast majority of people, I'm on a bus, I'm walking to work, I'm in an office, I have children in the house, there are giant fan systems, blah, 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 blah. The wireless stuff is fantastic and way better than it used to be.
And is that because we've got a better Bluetooth codec now?
There's Bluetooth, there's aptX, there's aptX HD, you know,
so that's
some other
of the
stuff
reasons,
going on.
Right?
That's one of the things. Also, Bluetooth sucks so much less than it used to. I'm actually going to say Bluetooth doesn't really suck anymore. I think about that a lot because I've been using, as you get into like Bluetooth 4 and Bluetooth 4 low energy, and you start getting towards Bluetooth 5, things get really They get better. They just get a lot better. Yeah.
Now, there is a massive convenience, as you point out, to not having a wire. You can go walk around.
Yeah.
You can do stuff. I mean, for best audiophile experience, you probably want a wired headphone.
But for convenience,
these aren't so bad. So this is the Sennheiser?
This is the Sennheiser HD1. This is probably my favorite wireless headphone right now. These sell for about $399.
That's pretty good. I mean, not for Bluetooth headphones.
Right.
But
I mean, you can get a nice pair of $100 Bluetooth headphones.
These are widely agreed to be the best Bluetooth headphones out there.
If there is a better set of Bluetooth headphones, or wireless, I should say wireless, because you can be running aptX on these rather than Bluetooth. If there is a better wireless headphone out there, I'm not sure I've found it yet.
Okay.
Like, my one complaint about these is you can't turn off the active noise cancellation.
Oh, that's annoying.
That's annoying. But the reality is it's really, really good. But it's also,
like it's sucking my brains out.
The nice thing about this, so one of the whole...
Doesn't it? When you put it on,
no.
It goes...
But that was my complaint for years with active noise cancellation. It is still kind of a complaint with the Bose stuff. Like Bose, they're like, we are going to give you warp factor 10 noise reduction, and that's the brain suckage when it's like 30 dBs of attenuation, and you're feeling like I've stepped into an anode and everything's wrong. So
these don't do that.
Yeah. Well, I would also say a lot of the Bose products, like the last one I listened to was one of their in-ears. It was like a $200 set of in-ears, and I thought, you know, these are amazing. I really can't hear the jet engines on the plane. And, you know, that's cool. I can read my book, and it's quiet on the plane.
Yeah,
and I can listen to an audiobook, and I can hear the audiobook over the plane. But as soon as I put on the Bose music on the Bose, I went, wow, the bass is really sloppy, and it's
terrible.
Overaccentuated.
Oh,
and the high end sucks, and the mid-range is kind of weak. And why the...
No highs, no lows. It's Bose.
So, which brings us to, there are lots of options.
That's not their slogan.
For not much more money than the atrocious sounding Bose.
Starting to flap now. It's starting to flap. There you go. This is doing the motion thing. And you see, we're now at this point, we've gone long enough. So about 5 minutes in, it says, you're too hot, and I'm going to lower the clock speed, which means this is going to go from, it was going to do this in half an hour. Is that a pretty good speed, you think, Anthony? It's about what you're getting on your old laptop? Oh, all right. Now it's going to take even longer.
Better is good. Yeah. For $4,000 on a new laptop, it should be a lot better. So the Sennheiser HD1, so they have active noise cancellation you can't turn off, but it's very, very good. It's not particularly
offensive. It's not annoying.
It's not annoying. It doesn't screw up the music.
It is on a plane a great thing.
It is a fantastic thing on a plane. It's a fantastic thing in an office if you have air conditioning.
If there's a hum.
It
doesn't work with like babies crying or people talking to you. It works with consistent noise.
It works best with consistent noises.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so... they've got like the leather ear pads and the stylish band here and stainless steel.
Actually, that's my complaint about these. I don't think they look very good.
Well, you know, compared to some of the headphones that are out there, these are at least understated.
They look better than the Grados. But...
Yeah, well, the Grados, I love Grados because they look so much like Grados. They're such like an artifact of the 1960s, and they're beautiful for that. You know, I love the fact that these have a volume control, and I'm going to point that out because...
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Nice, rich, full bass, detailed highs, good sound staging. This is a really impressive...
Are you allowed to use Bluetooth on a plane? Isn't that a radio?
As far as I... No one's tried to kick me out of the plane for using Bluetooth. If you are an expert, please email and don't arrest me.
These are... A little weird.
These started out as a Kickstarter project, yeah. So let me show you. The thing that freaks people out about
this is Nura, a combination Nuraphone.
My wife saw these for the first time. She's like, honey, that looks kind of obscene.
Yeah, it looks like...
I was like, get Georgia Keefe out of your brain. But
no,
these are...
It's not
this
Georgia
is a,
Keefe.
This is a...
It's the other one.
Yeah.
It's an Audi, not an Innie.
I'm just saying...
Goes right in your ear.
So many terrible places we can go.
Goes right in your ear.
So this is essentially,
this is like mixing the best of in-ear monitors and over-the-ear headphones.
Yeah,
the worst.
So there's the in-ear that kind of presses into your ear, and there's this over-ear and ear cups. There's kind of like two layers of insulation between your ear and the outside.
So it really gives you isolation.
Yeah. What it also does is they have a full-range driver that goes directly in your ear, and then they have what basically amounts to a subwoofer or a discrete woofer. And you can actually adjust the woofer up or down to get the intensity you want.
So the low end is not going into your ear. It's going into your ear,
but it's also going around your ear, and you can turn up the low end. I think of it as a loudness switch. The folks at Nuraphone would like to call it intensity. What's really interesting about these is when you set up the application, you connect the Bluetooth, you make sure it's updated, and what it does is it makes sure you have a good seal around your ear. And you do get a really good seal around your ear because you got the little thing poking into your ear. And the next thing it does is it runs a series of test tones in your ear and just like an otoacoustic measurement of the response from your ear.
So it's giving you a sound test?
Essentially. And what they do is they listen to the reflections. Essentially, they're listening to the vibrations from the cilii in your ear that react to the sound they send into your ear. And the idea is that that thing you're looking at is their reprimand. Instead of sort of having like, you know, you're down 30 dB at 10 hertz and you're up 30 dB at, well, 10 hertz. Nobody can hear 10 hertz.
But how would it know that? Because what the cilia are doing is not, it feels like.
If it works for measuring.
If I have nerve damage that makes me not be able to hear. At a certain level, well, why would that know?
If the hearing's gone completely,
it won't
there's
know
not
that.
A lot they can do. If the hearing, if you have a
it's
reduced
like mapping
response,
a cave by sending it's ultrasound to the cave.
And it's because what got me to reviews is somebody's like, are these legit or are they just woo?
Yeah, marketing just woo. Another one of those Kickstarter woo things.
And well, so otoacoustic measuring is essentially, there's a couple different ways of doing it, but it's how, for example, you measure hearing response in children that can't speak yet.
Oh, that makes
it is
sense.
Science. It is science used by audiologists. I cannot say to you that this is a fantastic, you know.
Although when I go to an audiologist, they're using the old school, raise your hand when you hear the tone.
That's because you're an adult.
Some would disagree.
That's not an argument we're going to get into in this show. But in any case, what they're saying is that they send signal in, they listen for the vibrations.
How
back.
Long does it take to get that?
A minute.
Okay.
You know,
does it sound like anything?
It sounds like, you know,
whooshing.
Have you ever run like an Odyssey test for an AV receiver where just a bunch of tones, stuff happens in your ear, you make a puzzled face like the RCA dog, and then what it does is it creates a custom fit. And it does.
Did you find it was pretty accurate for you?
I found it was certainly a much better listening experience after it had customized itself to my ear than before.
Nice.
And I also, it was funny because there's these little vents on the outside. You can barely see them. They're in between the ear cup and the silicone. So these are actually, this is the part that I love. I love saying this, Tesla valves.
Mm.
They're one-way valves. And what happens is they let air in at the bottom and air out at the top. And the idea is that it sort of keeps this a little bit cooler. Sounds ridiculous, probably is, but I just love saying Tesla valves. But I had left the wrapping on these because I always leave the wrapping on.
Yeah.
And by covering these valves, I completely screwed up the response of the headphone and made, because I ran the initial test and I was like, this is awful.
Oh.
And then I'm like, wait a minute, pulled
Your
the
Tesla
plastic off.
My Tesla valves weren't uncovered.
My Tesla valves weren't uncovered. When I uncovered the Tesla valve, it responded appropriately and tuned everything the way it was supposed to be.
So how they cost the same as the Sennheisers.
They do cost the same as the Sennheisers.
Do they sound better?
I don't think they sound better. I think they sound very, very good. I think the thing about these is whether or not you, because one of the things they just did with these is there's a pretty powerful DSP in this. There's some pretty powerful processing in this. And for example, they just did a software update that added active noise cancellation to these headphones.
Nice.
Yeah, pretty slick. So not only do you have like two layers of passive, you know, noise blocking here. You also have the active noise cancellation.
Can I try them on?
Absolutely.
Or is it too intimate?
You know, Leo, after the years we've spent together and the things we've done, this is the least intimacy I'm worried about at this point.
Hi, Patrick, I didn't know you cared.
Are they still warm?
It said, welcome back, Patrick.
Yeah.
Battery 80%.
Well, they're going to sound, they're not going to sound.
Can you do the test on me? No, because it'll screw them up.
I can do the test.
The reason I want to try them is I want to see how comfortable. They're fairly comfortable.
They're fairly comfortable.
It is a little weird that you're wearing over your headphones and there is something sticking into your ear.
Yes.
Do you have to adjust them to fit your ear better? Or does
you just sort of smoosh them around. There's actually a test that runs as you move them around to get them to the
get
point
the
where
best
everything
sealed.
Is sealed. Okay. Yeah. Oops. You know, it helps if I'm actually attached
Turn
to
it up. It sounds good.
The what are we? Oh, yeah. I don't think you want to hear Queens of the Stone Age. You might. Here, we'll get something. Have a little amber rhubarb. That'll make you happy.
No, it's too low. Turn it way up.
Here, I'll do something that won't blow your eardrums in the center of your skull.
Actually sounds very good.
Yeah. And that's in the neutral. That isn't even with the customization.
It sounds very good. There's a nice low end.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sound stage is very good. It's a good crisp. Sound I'm listening, it's like plucking strings, so I'm really hearing those as mm-hmm. if they're really there. That's quite good.
It's a really nice recording. It's Amber Rubarth. Song's called
Nobody. You said
Amber Rubarth.
Andrew Rubarth.
Amber. A-M-B.
Oh, she's good.
Amber Rubarth.
What did you say?
Sessions from the 17th Ward. It's a Chesky recording. It's a really fantastic recording, especially when listening to
it. It stopped. It knows.
Yeah. Oh, you touch the button, you turn it off. That's the one of the downsides. There's a button here that you can tap on and a button here you can tap on. And you can basically have two functions. So there's no volume control in the headphones themselves, which when I started using the Sennheisers, I realized how nice it is to be able to lower the volume and raise the volume without having to have your phone.
You know what's interesting?
In your hand.
I'm listening at a level I would lower than I would normally listen, but because the reproduction is so good, mm-hmm. it actually sounds fine. I mean, once I got used to the fact that it's a little lower.
It's one of the advantages
of
having...
I feel like I'm there.
Yeah. It's a really nice recording.
It
sounds
good. It's
a nice headphone. How do you feel about... Do you feel things poking in your ears, or had you forgotten until I reminded you?
I have a feeling it might bug me. Mm-hmm. It's not... I'm not sure I get used to it. It's definitely an odd experience. I mean, it's in your ear.
It is in your ear.
Yeah. It's interesting. So those are $399. So are the Sennheisers.
So are the Sennheisers.
They're a more traditional style, but maybe you want some Tesla baffles and audio testing in your ear. That was your curve or just a flat curve?
That should have been a flat curve.
Okay. Sounded good. Nura, N-U-R-A-P-H-O-N-E, Nura phone.
One last thing before we go.
Yes.
This is the Blue Wave Get.
I'm going to run and get this because this looks like what I want. This is a Bluetooth adapter.
Yeah, if you have a Bluetooth aptX HD.
Does aptX?
Yeah.
What are there any phones that do aptX? Yes, I know
a
the iPhone
whole
doesn't.
Lot, actually.
Oh, there are. So it has to, you have to get an Android.
They're all
device.
Android.
Yeah.
And actually, a bunch of them do aptX HD now, which is the next generation of aptX. So this is... it is a DAC. It is a headphone amplifier. It is very, very nice DAC. It's a headphone amplifier. It's battery powered.
Wow.
They said they'll sell you some short cables so you can just attach this. If you wanted to, say, attach this to your headphone and just carry it around that way.
Or I would just put it in my breast pocket maybe and have a little wire going from that to the...
And this is the Blue Wave Get. It's $129.
So that could make any headphone wireless.
Bingo. So if you have a set of headphones you love and you don't want
even
to buy...
Even my Hi-Fi Man. Maybe not, because those are pretty high-end.
This will drive the Hi-Fi Man.
Really?
Yeah. May not drive them to, you know, they may not drive it to the point where your eardrums will meet in the center of your skull, but you should be able to get uncomfortably loud with this.
All right. Let me see that. How much is this?
That is $129. Occasionally, they did at least one mass drop that had it down at $100.
Wow.
Those are coming out of Montreal, Canada. And
it's really
nicely made.
I like the idea of a headphone amplifier.
And it's got a microphone.
They can make a big difference. Oh, so I could press a button and hear the flight attendant.
Well, no, you can make phone calls with it. I haven't tried pressing a button to hear the
not that kind of microphone.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not ambient sound. But you could make phone calls, and if it's clipped... I notice it has a very convenient clip. So if it's clipped somewhere near your mouth, this would actually be pretty... I might get one of these.
It's
so then you
slick.
Can use your wired headphones, and they'd be wireless. Walk around.
How amazing is
that? I like
that.
Yeah. All right.
That's a BlueWaveAudio.ca.
BlueWaveAudio.ca.
So,
all right. Now I have to just get some aptX head...
You probably had at least one or two of the phones.
Maybe
you have
one of those ones I mentioned. Yeah, boy, look at this flapping right now. This is it's not
it's
now.
Flapping, it's, people.
Does that well? That's doesn't it look like it's flapping. It's the line is the nominal speed of 2.9 gigahertz. It's going above it and below it, and it's up and down and up and down and up and down. And that's with the eGPU involved as well. Although there's some question about how much of the eGPU it's actually using.
Get the script.
Yeah.
Get the script.
I need to get the script.
Script it.
Yeah.
Create a $4,000 machine and running scripts.
It's using the memory of the external graphics
maybe
processor.
It's misreporting what it's doing.
Yeah, maybe iStat Pro is confused. Maybe that 560 is really... I don't know. That's an interesting... it's odd.
It's so confusing.
It's very strange. Yeah, see? Something's wrong there. I don't know.
Coming up, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about... Uninterruptible. UPS.
What did Jerry call it? An unassisted power supply?
Unlimited.
Unlimited
power
unlimited.
Supply. I like the unlimited power supply. Uninterruptible power supply. We've got.
Do you have a blog yet? I remember back in the days.
It just so happens I am in the final stages of getting PatrickNorton.com
for
live.
For 20 years, this guy's been making his blog. Well, I remember we made one for you, and it just sat there like a blog on a log. I'll tell you where my blog is, LeoLaporte.com. It's at WordPress.com. And for years, I've been a WordPress fan. In fact, I'm not alone. 31% of all the websites in the world, 31% run at WordPress.com. That is a mind-boggling stat. I don't know anybody's got that kind of dominance. And there's a good reason. WordPress is great. It's the best. WordPress.com makes it easy. They do the hosting. They give you support. They give you all the templates you need. They give you all the design you need. You don't have to do any coding. You don't have to know HTML from CSS. It just gives you a place where you can create a site that reflects you, whether it's a personal blog that has that Norton style or it's your business. They even have e-commerce now at WordPress.com, so you can get everything from a big, simple buy button, buy it now button, to a whole store. And they start at just $4 a month. Customer support's there all day, Monday through Friday, 24 hours, and then weekends too. So you can always get a hand from very nice people who are very knowledgeable. When it's time to expand your online reach, WordPress has great business plans too. That's what I use. That way you get SEO, search engine optimization, built in, social sharing. So people on Facebook and Twitter can share the good news about your business, specialized plugins to meet your needs. I use the Google AMP plugin, Akismet, which is the best anti-spam comment engine in the world. Actually, Akismet has to be one of the reasons WordPress is so popular. Get started today. 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS for new screensavers. That's WordPress.com/NSS. 15% off. Thank you. Thank you, WordPress, not only for supporting the show, but for supporting the blog. Dare I ask? Yours is probably somewhere else. Is it on WordPress?
I believe it is.
WordPress.com/NSS. If it's not, I can get you a deal. Let's do a call for help. On the line right now from St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Hello, Rick. Oh, no. Oh, there he is. Oh, you scared me,
hey,
Rick.
Guys.
I thought you were Skyped. Good to see you.
I was.
You know WordPress because you were at WordCamp Hamilton 2015. Look at that.
Yeah. Yep, I was.
Are you a WordPress blogger, developer? What do you do?
I'm a web developer.
Nice.
I used WordPress on occasion.
Nice. Well, what can we do to help you in your job?
Okay, so here's the deal. I live in an area with wonky power.
Uh-oh.
It tends to go out for just long enough to kill my computer. Sometimes it'll do it once a week, sometimes three times in 10 minutes. And the issue is, with my job, I run a couple of virtual machines in the background and stuff, and sometimes they'll get corrupted if they don't get shut down properly. So I need an uninterruptible power supply.
Yes,
but
you do. You
there's so
do.
Many options now, and I don't Too many. Know how much power I need.
So how long are you? We were talking earlier. Did you say there was something like 58 or 88 power outages that you knew of in the past few months?
Yeah, my alarm sends me a text message when the power goes out.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was 58 times in the last 18
Holy cow.
Months.
That's bad. I mean,
yeah.
In its simplest form, it's just a big battery, an uninterruptible power supply. When the power goes out, your stuff keeps running. In some cases, it's not enough to keep it running for hours.
In most cases, it's enough to keep it running for minutes. Until
yeah,
you
so you then have the chance to orderly shut everything down.
So what you're looking for is, one, I want to point out, there's a fantastic article on the Wirecutter where they talk about the best uninterruptible power supply for most people.
We
right?
love the Wirecutter.
Yeah, and what they did is, one, they walked through a lot of what's going on inside of it, just like they did for surge protectors, where they explain a lot of what's going on and what you actually need.
So tell me, because my sense is there's kind of two big kinds of UPSs. One, where when the power goes out, they switch on. They
right.
affect the battery comes in. And at that point, there's a very brief dropout. There's also uninterruptible power supplies that you're effectively running on all the time. That's the kind we use here. And if the right, I think that's the kind we use here. And if the power goes out, there's no transition from the point of view of the computer because there's no downtime. Here's one.
Did you take that
out of my office?
Yes.
Oh, man.
This is a classic APC.
That's APC. They've been around forever.
750.
And ever, and ever.
Yeah, I mean, I actually started running the one the Wirecutter recommended, which is CyberPower.
I like CyberPower, too.
So one of the nice things about the CyberPowers is that it will give you what they do is there's a word in my head that I cannot think of.
It's got coils, and it actually adjusts the voltage. When I was younger, I knew what these words were. I would say a transformer inside of there. And what it does is it...
Is it keeping the consistent voltage?
Yes.
One of the real issues...
Transformer is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
What it essentially does is it does line voltage regulation, or
That's
if you want to
really
get fancy,
important.
Line interactive topology.
Because power going out, completely obviously is bad, but brownouts are bad and spikes are bad.
And you tend to have brownouts and spikes a lot more than anything else.
In fact, you get a spike often when the power comes back on.
Yeah.
And so you want to smooth that all out so you have a nice, clean sine wave, right, of power.
And so, you know, having a line interactive topology basically means that it's going to take care of all the little stuff without going to the battery, which is nice. And then when you do go to the battery...
Is that power conditioning? Would you call that power conditioning?
Yeah, I might, but I'm not an expert.
Okay.
So it's certainly better than... There's a couple things here that I want to say is, one, don't plug a surge protector into a UPS, and don't plug a UPS into a surge protector, because in a worst-case scenario, you can actually cancel out the surge protection on both devices.
Seems like a bad idea.
I just want to say that right now. So there is surge protection, and it's usually pretty good built into most UPSs. And the biggest issue is that you want to get a UPS that covers all of the devices you want to shut down gracefully, and you're going to have to calculate the wattage that they all consume. Because, for example, there's a...
I've had this problem where you have so much power being drawn out of this thing that actually... When you put the stuff on, it actually turns everything off.
Yeah.
It can't support all the power you're drawing.
Well,
the other thing is, these are big batteries. They're really heavy. And if it's not heavy, you don't want it, right?
Well, but the thing is, as big as that is, right, that's like a 12-volt alarm battery inside of there, which you may want to replace at this point.
That's another thing. Don't drop them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, well, you want to be careful, right? Because when you look at this, there's a bunch that actually support battery backup.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
And then there's a bunch.
All...
Yeah. These are the ones that support battery backup. These don't support
battery
backup.
That's just surge protecting there. Yeah.
And that's important. Like, you don't want to – don't put your printer on the battery backup. Don't put anything –
you don't care if your printer's not working.
You put your computer. You put maybe if you have a Drobo or a NAS type box. By the way, Drobo's occasionally been a sponsor here.
Yes, we like.
On the Twit.
My Synology is on – what was that other company? CyberPower. That's my Synology's on a CyberPower.
So you want to basically, you're going to have to calculate the power consumption on your computer and your monitor and anything else that is Michigan critical in the case of the power goes out.
And then doing that, you can see how long it's going to keep you going for, right?
And it's kind of crazy. Like for a CP685 AVR, that's like the choice that the wire cutter does for basic, like, okay, you're going to protect, let's say, your cable modem and your router so you can keep using your laptops and the power goes out. That's going to keep, you know, like a 50-watt load running for, I want to say, 50 minutes or something. But the 300...
That's exactly the one I have.
Yeah, but the 300-watt load that's coming off of your computer, it may only last for like 8 or 10 minutes. So you need to actually calculate this out. And
that's
may actually want to test
it. That's with that 685 VA, 685 volt amps. That's the number, right, that we look at? I don't know what it is. Then there's the watts.
Well, the watts is what it's rated for to support off of the battery.
Yeah.
And the we could start doing the math on this, but we'll put everybody at home to sleep. The short answer is, you see the big one on the right? More stuff you have, you're laughing, but the more stuff you have, the more likely you are to want the big one on the right. Like, they do the CP1500. The CP1500, that costs $200, and that's going to keep a 300-watt load running for 8 minutes, which is not a long time. So you need to calculate what the load is on your computer, what the load is on your monitor, in case you actually need to close things out manually. And then you need to figure out, you may need to spend considerably more than $200 if you are, you know, if this is your work computer and it's worth money to you, but... You know,
we have on almost all of our mission critical gear, we have UPSs. In fact, Russell just replaced the UPS in my office. Is this the one that he took out?
It's from an edit station.
It's pretty dusty. That's usually a bad sign. That's the other thing about a UPS. The batteries do wear out.
Yeah. Well, most of the time you can replace the battery.
Yeah, you got to check them. And you may want to order new batteries from time to time. There you go. Look at that. Look how easy that was. Wow. See, it's heavy.
No, it's stuck.
Oh. What are you using right now, Rick? What's your situation?
For a backup?
For
nothing,
UPS.
Literally.
You're not doing anything?
Not a thing.
So when these power outages come along, you're just out of luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's about the worst.
Why I need to do it.
that's about the worst thing you can do. You really, even if this isn't going to run you for more than a few minutes, at least you can shut down.
Well, the other thing, are you at least running a surge protector?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because one of the things that happens sometimes is when you have a particularly vicious brownout or blackout, sometimes when the power comes back up,
that's right.
You get
a big surge.
Yeah, a big surge in the voltage, which can be really nasty. I'm also laughing because I had somebody who works for a utility once get into a big argument with me about how I couldn't possibly have it, having the voltage or the cycles I was measuring. And then I sent him a picture of a kilowatt, and he was like, that's really unusual. I was like, yeah, 55 hertz is a little odd for electricity in the U.S.
APC used to, I don't know if they still do, I bet they do, though, on their website have a calculator.
Yeah.
Where you could say, okay, I got a PC, it uses, and you can, sometimes it's, you don't know, well, what is my PC using, but you can usually figure that out based on the power supply in the back. What is this using, what is that using? Add it all up, use the calculator, and it'll tell you how much you need. Doesn't mean you have to buy an APC device, but you can at least get a sense of what kind of requirements you
and
might have.
They probably sell them in Amazon CA, a kilowatt, which is a really nice tool for measuring the power
consumption. Oh, I
love
that. Yeah. Do you have one of those?
I have two.
I keep meaning to buy those because it measures consumption. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's another way. If you don't trust the calculator,
that's
curious.
That's APC's site. So that'll give you some idea of – it's not exactly the most sophisticated thing I've ever seen, but it'll give you some idea.
Well, they used to have a lot of ones where you would check off a lot of devices. And I remember laughing because it was talking about at the particular time, its idea of what a desktop machine load was about half of what – the machine we had just built on the screensaver.
They've made this a lot simpler, which is probably fine. So you see 136-watt power draw for an iMac, that kind of thing.
If most of your, you know, if most of your brownouts are super, super shorts, just going to any uninterruptible power supply will make a huge difference.
So are you saying, though, this is an interesting thing, I wouldn't want to put a power strip onto the UPS. I want to get one that has enough plugs for all the devices I need.
Yeah, get one that has enough plugs. So there's three things going on here. Don't plug a surge protector into a UPS.
Yes.
Don't plug a UPS
Can I
into
use
a surge protector.
A dumb power strip on
Sure, but at some point you're going to overload things. What's important
is
this and this and this and this and this. These are all...
Those are the battery.
Those are the battery. And you're going to feel really silly if it's like, this is your CPU, and this is your incredibly important backup hard drive NAS system, and this is your monitor, and look, I've got a printer here, which is going to suck
down. Don't put a printer on there. Nothing non-critical,
that isn't absolutely essential should be on those batteries.
And you may or may not decide the monitor is. Plus. I think you need the monitor because you need to be able to see what you're doing when you're shutting the PC
down. Well, yeah, because there's usually software that's like, okay, we've got a USB plug that goes in your machine, and it sets everything down gracefully, but sometimes software doesn't work. Sometimes software doesn't work.
I do have to say, on my Synology, there is a connector that goes, a USB connector that goes into the CyberPower. They communicate. The Synology will send me an email saying we're on cyber, we're on battery right now, we've got five more hours to go, that kind of thing is really handy, give some idea. And then I could go remotely in and shut the Synology down if I had to. So if you're putting a NAS or something like that on there, or a Drobo, that's a nice feature to have, is that USB connection into the and the CyberPower that I'm using.
So it would be nice for it to shut down gracefully.
Yeah, actually, I think there's also, in theory, as you say, software you could put on your PC that will shut it down.
Yeah. One of the nice things about adding in a good uninterruptible power supply is that it will also, you may find if you have continuing problems with hard drive errors or failures, they might magically go away once you have a UPS
in there smoothing out
the power. Because a lot of things we think of as being hard drive errors are power errors that impact the hard drive.
Just fluctuations, brownouts, things like that. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
It's frustrating and anger-inducing, but interesting is another gracious word for it.
Actually, this is the one. This is the one I got. I think that's. I don't know if that's the one they recommended, but that was $100. And this is what's running my NAS, and I've had it for a couple of years. It really is smart enough to do the things I want, and you see, I like the readout and things like that. So, yeah, this I would highly recommend these CyberPower devices. They're very good.
Yeah,
5-year warranty on the battery. That's nice.
Very nice.
Yeah. Does that help, Rick?
Yeah, that helps a lot, guys. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Welcome. I'm looking at what you have. That is a pretty hefty computer, so you're definitely going to want a lot of wattage for that. But just the monitor and the computer, I think the CyberPower give you more than enough.
I tend to err to getting... go ahead.
Sorry, most of the time it's not really drawing that much load, though, right? Like, I've got a couple of VMs in the background and a text editor.
Well, you might be surprised. is it warm?
Well, that's why it's nice to have the kilowatt.
It actually runs surprisingly quiet, and it's cool.
Nice. I might have to get that instead of this thing. You know, anytime you feel warmth, you know that it's using a lot of extra juice because it's converting it instead of into thinking into heat. That's not a good thing. Nice to talk to you, Rick. I appreciate it.
I'd just like to say thanks very much, you guys, for all the content you've created over the years. Big fan since the early years.
Thank you.
So thank you for that.
Thank you. Thanks for watching. If you're a young person, you probably don't realize Patrick and I have been working together for 20 years now, starting in the screen.
We were young when we started. I had hair.
He had hair. I had brown
Me
hair.
Me too.
So it's been a great run, a couple of decades. And I wonder, we sometimes should do some math between the two of us, how many hours of stuff we've created. It's got to be
together
thousands.
Or separately?
Both. You know, separately.
Together, I think we did over 1,100 hours of the screensavers.
Just the screensavers.
Just the screensavers.
Wow. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good one. Take care. Next week, Jason Howell is in studio with Woo-hoo. Us. If you have an Android question for our host of All About Android, here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
You know, I'm looking at it. Rather than doing the calculations, I looked at this cyber power. The $66 for a 600-volt amp, $95 for 825. I just bought the top. I didn't do the calculations. I said, well, for $30 more, it's good to have 450 watts. Maybe I'll use it
more
someday.
Is generally
balanced. It's not hugely expensive. It's really just a big battery, right? Once they've done all the software and the circuitry, the battery is the size of it.
Oh, someday we'll have a talk about batteries in the Airstream.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, coming up, we're going to wrap things up with the mailbag. We've got some questions. But first, let's go to Jason Howell. He has a review of something you might want to get, the new Moto Z3 Play watch.
The $500 price category of smartphones has become very competitive in recent years, and that's great for consumers because it means that if you don't have $1,000 to drop on the world's top-of-the-line devices, you still have a great selection of handsets that are rocking fantastic internals and modern-looking designs. In this price range, it's tough to beat the recently released OnePlus 6, which costs $529, but Motorola is game to try. Here's my review of the Moto Z3 Play. The Z3 Play it's a little bit of a chameleon, actually. At first blush, it's an incredibly thin device encased entirely in glass and surrounded by aluminum edges. Looking at it from the side, you almost look through it due to its rather svelte design. But its other look includes this battery pack. It's a Moto Mod, a modular attachment. And if I put it onto the back here, snaps right on. And there you go. You have the full phone. It snaps on magnetically. It's part of Motorola's Moto Mod lineup. With that attached, the Z3 Play has a bulkier body. The back is no longer delicate glass, but a tackier plastic. In other words, you have choices. And that's not even considering the fact that the battery pack adds an additional 2220 milliamp hours to the internal 3000 milliamp hours of battery storage. This is a full 2 days on a single charge kind of phone, and that's a huge selling point. Now on the front, a 6.01-inch full HD AMOLED display that actually reaches closer to the bezels than previous models. Not quite bezel-less has been the trend, but a big improvement nonetheless. On the side is a uniquely placed fingerprint sensor. And considering the way that we usually hold our phones, it actually makes a lot of sense. There it is right there. Now, down below is a USB-C port for turbo power fast charging. And since you won't find a headphone jack anywhere on this phone, that USB-C port is also the solution for you wired headphone users. Inside, the Z3 Play runs on a 1.8 gigahertz octa-core Snapdragon 636 processor that, while not top of the line, is likely improving the battery performance of the device even more. 4 gigs of RAM and either 32 or 64 gig storage configurations are there, as well as a micro SD card slot for expansion. The Z3 Play is on Oreo 8.1, and if you've ever spent time with a modern Motorola Android phone, you know that Motorola is good at adding thoughtful enhancements without things feeling cheap and intrusive. Moto Actions are gestures that activate functions of your phone. So twisting your phone in your wrist will launch the camera. And then, let's see here, double chopping will toggle the flashlight. And, you know, I can turn it back off. It also includes an opt-in feature called OneNav that is gesture navigation at the OS level. You swipe up from the pill at the bottom for the app drawer, swipe to the right, and you'll get multitasking, swipe to the left, and that'll take you back It'll be interesting to see how this changes once Android P brings its own gesture navigation paradigm to the device down the road. And Motorola's popular Moto display feature is here yet again. But Moto's enhancements continue in the camera app by way of the dual camera setup on the Z3. There's a 12-megapixel camera coupled with a 5-megapixel monochrome shooter on the back. That's shooting at f1.7 aperture. And Moto has included a number of unique photo shooting modes inside of the camera app, like the now obligatory portrait mode, of course. But there's also a few other modes like cutout mode, which separates you from your background. There's spot color mode, which focuses on a single color in the image. Cinemagraph, which animates your image slightly. And then a bunch more, including some video modes like face filters, though some of these don't actually work in selfie mode, so you need to find, you know, friends. And it was the time for that. Outside of the bells and whistles, the photos taken with the Z3 Play are perfectly passable, I'd say, for the price. I did hope for better results for the high dynamic range mode. Things still looked overly dark in some places, but this isn't a camera phone. It's a phone with a camera, and to that purpose, it's sufficient. So then, the question remains, if the OnePlus 6 is an excellent pick at $529, is there still reason to recommend the Moto Z3 Play at $500? And it really depends on your priorities. If battery life is the most important factor, or you just gotta have some modularity in your phone, the Moto Z3 Play is in a league all of its own. Outside of those two reasons, however, the Moto Z3 Play is a tough sell when compared to the heavyweight contender that is the OnePlus 6. It's not that the Z3 Play is a particularly bad phone. It isn't. But comparing apples to apples, the OnePlus 6 is a better phone for the price. I'm Jason Howell, and I'm talking all about Android each and every week here on Twit.tv.
Jason really likes that OnePlus phone.
Everybody likes it.
Yeah. But do you want to get an iPhone or you want to go Android?
The cameras have gotten so much better.
Right.
On the $250 to $500 yeah. Android phones, I want to try one because my one complaint with the Motorola G4 I ran for a year was the camera was atrocious.
Mediocre. Yeah,
no, it was atrocious. It was mediocre.
Mediocre.
It was an awful
okay.
camera. But looking at like the camera you can get on the G6 for like $250 or. The OnePlus 6 for like $550 is amazing.
Yeah, I think they've kind of done a really good job on these cameras. Yeah.
It's not as good as the $1,000 ones, but you know what? I don't want to spend $1,000 on a phone.
You're close because the new Google Pixel is coming out in the fall. Google's cut the prices considerably on the Pixel 2. I think those are great phones, too. They're not quite $500, but I think they're down to $750, something.
My issue with the Pixel 2 is they have issues like if IPv6 is turned on, it vomits all over itself and won't connect to the internet because it keeps
really?
Trying to reconnect. There's some...
That's not good.
No, it's irritating as hell.
It's what I use for Pokemon Go.
Well, there you have it.
It is time for the mailbag. Adam, in his Darth Vader shirt, is going to give us the mailbag. Thank you, Adam. And, this is exciting. We'd love to give you the brand new BlackBerry X2 phone with built-in keyboard. How about that, Patrick Norton?
Part of me's like, oh, exciting. And part of me's like, I thought you were my friend.
We have to give it back to BlackBerry, don't we?
Yeah. They'd be very upset about that.
I lied. Ooh, what's this? You printed them on cardboard.
Stylish cardboard.
Stylish cardboard. Pick an email, any email. Yeah, Jason didn't like that all too much.
I don't think anyone liked it all too much.
Email one. Hey, we got this from James. He sent us
James.
A video. Watch.
Going, gang. Thanks for taking the time to answer my question today. I have an Apple AirPort Extreme router, which is now discontinued, no longer supported by Apple. And I was wondering if switching to a Linksys AC5400 or AC2200 would give me any better performance in the house, which the house is not very large, so that's not too much of an issue. My son does a lot of multiplayer gaming. We have an Apple TV, two iPhones, an iPod, two iPads, all going at the same time. And just like, again, a performance boost and some support going into the future. Love the show. Thanks for bringing it.
Thank you for the video, James. Thanks for sending a video, too. It's nice to see your exercise equipment in the background there. It's funny. When people first started doing the ZDTV Netcam network,
right.
We'd see there. And a lot of them never made their beds. And I think we were able to shame most of them into making their beds. Now... we're seeing a lot of exercise equipment. I think we have a healthier bunch.
I think they're trying to shame us into exercise.
Oh, that's it. So I don't know about you. You tell me, but Linksys is the last one I would ever buy as a Link system.
I don't think it's the last one I would ever buy. My first thought is, one, if your current router is functioning and you don't have performance issues and it offers all the features you need, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Oh, I couldn't disagree more.
Because one of the problems
right
now... I
could not disagree with you
when
more.
When you start looking at... At some point,
no.
A year or two ago...
That router's 6 years old. He absolutely should replace it.
Okay, well, in that case, I'd probably...
I mean, Apple did a good job with those, but they are way out of date.
Okay. You know,
they're way out of
date. I'm running an iPhone 6, so I'm also. I've also rotated through four or five different mesh networks in my house. The Synology RT2600AC.
That's a very nice one.
That's a very nice one. Yeah. And one of the nice things about Synology's router is about $200. Is they are super on top of updates for that, especially security updates.
That's the key. Now Apple will, I'm sure, continue to do that because they're Apple, but they are not supporting that anymore. So I mean, you'll get security patches, but that thing is going to start looking longer and longer in the tooth. Plus, I think routers. People disagree with me because they say no, it's solid state, but if you know, feel your router. They're hot. There's nowadays we're doing so much traffic, a lot of bandwidth going through there. Mm-hmm. I think routers actually wear out. They actually become less reliable.
I don't think
over
they.
Have you had experience of rebooting your router recently? Do you feel like every once in a while you have to reboot your router because the internet just goes out?
Well, I'm running a Netgear Orbi mesh system in my home right
Very
now.
Very nice choice.
It's fantastic. It is the fastest thing out there. It does a great job.
Highly recommend it. But I don't. He said he's got a small house. He doesn't maybe need a mesh router. I'm very fond of the Asus. You know, if instead of Linksys, at least if you want a standalone router, get an Asus. Mm-hmm. I think those are nice because they're DDWRT compatible. They took DDWRT and adapted it for the Asus routers, and they give you a lot of features that the Apple AirPort Extreme doesn't. For instance, you can do QoS. You can actually monitor how much bandwidth each computer is using. The AirPort Extreme doesn't do that. There's a lot of features, even mesh-like features, which the Asus offer, that just, you know, are new. They're not in a six-year-old router. I really think that you get some benefits from getting a newer router.
Yeah, I mean, this is also another case where Wirecutter, they just redid their entire router recommendations. Jim Salter did 140
he's
hours
great.
Of
I
testing.
Love Jim.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he actually, what's interesting
is... They like
is,
the Netgear, oddly enough.
Yeah, the Netgear R7000P.
Yeah. Which is not a bad router. They used to like the TP-Link because it was cheap.
The TP-Link actually, it wasn't just cheap, it had excellent performance.
The Archer C7,
and, well, here's one of the problems is there's a lot of routers out right now where it's like, it's, you know, the 7500 CP, or we have 37, they started adding numbers that don't mean anything together to make the numbers sound larger so that people would buy the routers. Yeah. There's a lot of features going on in routers that are completely useless these days.
I would say, here's the other thing, I think there are a lot of companies that are not keeping their routers up to date. And if you look at the list, for instance, of routers that were vulnerable to VPN filter, Netgear was on that list. Mm-hmm. Linksys was on the list. I would say pick your router company carefully because you're going to rely on them for the next 3 to 5 years.
Right.
For regular security updates. That's important.
A good way to do it is if a router's been out for a year or two, go to the website, see if there's been any updates.
Well, that's another thing that's coming that most routers now do is they update themselves. So that old Apple router, most of these old Linksys routers, you had to actively see if there was firmware. That's not a good thing. You want, and I think if any IoT device now, any device you're putting in your home that goes on the internet should have automatic updates so that when there is a problem, that company could push an update to you. You don't have to proactively figure it out and get it.
Part of me agrees with you completely, and part of me, there are so many Internet of Things devices out of there, and some of them are so poorly configured, I'm not sure I want them automatically doing anything other than, say, turning on and off the light bulb.
Okay, get a good one and one that automatically updates.
But, I mean, you're laughing, but the truth is so many of these devices, so many of these devices are rebranded from a Chinese manufacturer with just a little bit of spackle rolled over the interface of whatever the generic software was.
If that's your attitude, that's fine. But then it's on you to regularly, every week, check every IoT device in your house and see if it's up to date.
Fortunately, there's not.
Do you really
want
to do that?
On one hand,
really
I don't.
Want to
but
do
on
that?
The other hand, how many devices?
How often do you check to see if your router's up to date?
Probably every 2 weeks.
That's good.
But,
you
know,
need
I
to
spend
that.
A lot of quality time next to people
Actually,
who do pen
your
testing.
Your Arby's are good.
Living.
They get updated automatically.
Yes.
And that's what I'm a fan of.
Yeah. I mean, my previous router, I was like, oh, they've updated it once in the last 2 years.
Yeah. That's
and,
not
And
what
I
want.
Just, it's frustrating because so many companies, they vomit out a router and then they may do one goodbye. Upgrade, and then they Thank never you. Really touch it again.
Yeah. You also don't want WPS on it. That is just notoriously insecure. You want to make sure that yeah. you can turn off WLAN administration, that the router passwords are not yeah. hardwired. There's a lot of things. Well, I think those ASUSes are very good. I would recommend mm-hmm. those. Not going to recommend Linksys. I'm sorry. I just can't. And I do think you need to get a new router. I think it's time.
Okay.
You know, time. The good news is you spent way too much on that Apple Airport Extreme. So
everything
else is going to seem fairly yeah. reasonably priced. If you're one of those people with a $40 Linksys router, you're getting sticker shock when you go to the store now. They're all $180, $200. It's very expensive now.
Yeah, and what's alarming is that some of the most expensive routers out there are not necessarily
not
delivering great performance and aren't being updated.
Do you own the Synology? Do you not use it, or did you just tested it?
I tested it. At this point, we can make the horsehair plaster jokes, and my house is
small. Is bad.
In theory, my house should be coverable with a single
You don't
router.
Need an Orbi, in other words.
Yeah. I should not need an Orbi, but the performance on the Orbi delivers almost three times the performance
yeah.
from the front of my house to the back of my
Big
house
fan.
Compared to the routers that I've run.
It is of all the mesh routers, the fastest. And they yes. also...
They have a dedicated, like, 1750 megahertz backlink.
Right. And I think they're the only one that has an outdoor access
I have
point.
Tested that on TechThing.
That is so cool.
Including spraying it with a hose.
I like that.
Yeah.
Because I think now we'd use a lot of Wi-Fi outside, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the
But what's crazy is the Netgear Orbi is the one I have at the back of my house. I was actually getting like 25 megabits per second at the far end of my garage. So I started experimenting with the outdoor version of the Orbi to see if I could increase the speed at the back of my garage.
Right.
And that's been a fun experiment.
Well, I have outdoor cameras, as you know, mm-hmm. and I need somehow to get Wi-Fi out to them. What I ended up doing is using plumes because I could daisy chain plumes on the way out to the garage where all the cameras can hook up to that. I actually have two mesh networks in the house, and then I use an Eero for the normal consumer.
Yeah.
You know, I put the IoT stuff on the plume. That's it funny. All works, sort of.
It all works,
sort of. What's your question?
We got one. Hi, Leo and Patrick. I'm looking to replace my old blown stereo speakers. Music has been my emotional crutch for all of my life, as I used to be a sound engineer back in the 80s. Living on Social Security and fighting cancer, I don't have a lot of money to spend on this. Yeah, I'm mining the Dayton Audio T652 Air and T652 Tower speakers. The difference is the polycarbonate dome versus AMT tweeter. Which would you recommend? My life is tough right now, and I really want my good hi-fi sound for my sanity. Thanks, David.
That's a tough spot to be in, because I know exactly what you mean. The best thing to make you feel better is great music, but it's the hardest thing to do because you don't have a lot of money. Can you get good speakers for less?
You know, first of all, I'm not a big fan of used subwoofers at this point, unless you're getting maybe Shu or SVS. I'm not a big fan of a lot of older headphones right now because headphones and subwoofers have made huge advances in the last decade.
Interesting.
Speakers, however, I got to say, if Craigslist is active near you,
I agree.
Take a look on Craigslist because there are so many B&W and KEF and some of the better Klipsch models. There's a bunch of amazing stuff
out
there.
This is a great time because a lot of people who have good stereos are either dying or they're buying HomePods or something and just dumping them. You can go to – I would even go to secondhand stores. I haunt the audiophile subreddit mm-hmm. on Reddit, and at least half of the posts are, look what I found. Look at these great KEF speakers that I found at the local Goodwill.
Things get picked pretty fast here in the Bay Area.
But I would look around.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Definitely used is not a bad idea. But that's a good point. Don't get used subs or used headphones. But used main speakers, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean...
You like KEFs?
I like
Klipsch?
Yeah, okay. So for bargain speakers, my favorite right now are ELAC. If ELAC debut 2.0, they updated the ELAC debut.
I am really excited about those ELACs.
Did you get the Unifies yet?
I didn't. You told me to. I've got a letter... An email from the head of ELAC, he says, let's talk. I just said, I don't want them for free. I just want you to send them to me, and I'll pay for them. Mm-hmm. And I want to get those. Those look really – I want
to
get
– I may be driving down to L.A. next week. I can
pick them up for me?
Yeah, that's what I'll do.
And I'm going to get the – they also have Atmos. See those upfiring?
Upfiring Atmos I'm not the biggest fan of, but that's a conversation
I just
day.
Want – they're not expensive. I just want them.
You just want them.
So when I watch, you know,
Well, they also have
Jurassic
the ones you can
Park.
Put in the – you should – you've got the – you own your house. You should put them in the ceiling.
I guess I could.
You could. Oh, I'm going to... Lisa's going to be talking to me later.
I was looking at the debut too. Last time you were here, you said get the Unify.
Yeah, well, you've got the money to get the Unify. Get the Unify. It's especially for like the front three speakers. Get the Unify. If I was looking at the Dayton Audio, the 652, it's an interesting speaker. The 652 Air is an even more interesting speaker because they have like active motion transformers, and essentially. That what it does is instead of having a speaker that moves in and out, it has sort of fabric material that squeezes kind of like an accordion. And there are some unbelievable speakers that sound absolutely amazing. These tend to be, they don't have a lot of bass, the Dayton Audio T652. And I think the treble's a little harsh. Fortunately, they're actually a less expensive speaker. It's like $59 a pair, the MK402 from Dayton Audio. I would do that before I would do the T652 speakers. And again, it's like $10 or $20 less. I would also, like I said, take a look at used speakers because there are some amazing used speakers that are selling for not much money on
People
Craigslist
don't appreciate
and other places.
Stereos anymore. Go to a swap meet. Go to the pawn shop.
Yeah.
Right? That's another place you could go if there's a pawn shop in town.
The last time you've been in a pawn shop?
Never. Sometimes you have to fix them, though, and you might have to replace a dome.
Yeah.
You might have to...
Well, it's funny. What you don't want to have to do is to replace the surrounds on the wall. I mean, if you're into this kind of thing, it's great.
He's not because he has a blown speaker and he hasn't fixed it. So,
but it's amazing. Like I have a set of Paradigm speakers that don't have rubber surrounds that have the I can't think of the name of the material.
Cardboard.
No, it's the stuff that attaches the speaker to the spider, essentially. And it's amazing, like around 20 years ago, they switched to material. It doesn't actually now.
It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
In the old days, the rubber would
disintegrate, and you end up with a speaker that just sort of hangs there and and just doesn't work. It doesn't speak anymore. But like, I've got a set of Paradigms that are 20 years old that still sound amazing.
They're using
and those
some
sell
sort of polyester.
For no money.
Or,
yeah. It's a poly,
or
it's a synthetic rubber material.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I should know, but I forgot.
You're dangerous for me because whenever we start talking this stuff, I end up spending money. So I'm going to stop right.
I haven't
here.
Even gotten to the expensive speakers.
I know.
So
I want diamond tweeters. Where can I get those?
You don't want diamond. I've heard the diamond tweeters on a $400,000 set of speakers.
They're harsh.
They're awful.
Yeah,
that's $400,000 speakers should not sound bad.
No,
I just want to say that right now. But David,
what's just out of curiosity?
Yeah,
what do you got? When you want to sit down and listen to great music on a pair of speakers, not in headphones, what do you got?
My primary cool guy speakers are the ELAC Unify bookshelf speakers.
See?
Which are fantastic. They are amazing for the money. I also have a set of speakers I like very much, a set of Tecton Mini Lures, which is a very sensitive speaker that I can use with a very low power amplifier that I built.
Patrick.
And those sound pretty amazing
too. And then he listens to the worst music you've ever heard on these.
You know?
The worst.
You know, you were listening to Amber Rupart there.
No, that was good.
It. Yeah.
I like that.
I have a broad palate. Just because you're not a Rage Against the Machine fan, which is a fantastic.
Why would you listen to industrial noise on those beautiful speakers?
You know,
put some music on there. I'm just saying. I love you. Patrick Norton, it's so great. Thank you for making the trip up here.
Thanks
we really appreciate
me,
it. Thanks, Sarah, and your kids, too, because I know you have to take some time out from them on a Saturday. So
it's,
I appreciate it.
They thank you.
Catch Patrick on This Week in Computer Hardware with Ryan Schrout.
Please do.
TechThing.com with Snubs. And this new one you're doing with Robert
AVXL,
Heron.
AVEXCEL with Robert Heron, which is a weekly. We talk about home
all
theater
this stuff
gear,
that we were just talking
television
about.
Television screens, projectors, speakers, headphones.
Hey, I want you guys to come up.
Yeah.
Who's sending us the 100-inch screen? Is it TCL?
Hisense.
Oh my!
We're gonna install. I don't know where we're putting it. 100-inch screen. And we want to get you and Robert up to give us your review. What do you think?
I'm in.
All right. I was hoping we'd get it before the World Cup, but that's all right. We'll find something to watch. The Olympics are coming up.
Movies.
Movies
can be very enjoyable.
Movie. Oh, it's a projector? No, it's direct
view. It's a short throw projector.
Oh, it is.
Short throw laser. These are fascinating.
I am fascinated because they're right up against the wall, but somehow they magically look square.
Lenses are amazing
things. It's a magical thing. All right, so this isn't going to take a big install. We need to put a screen in.
They're bringing somebody to install.
They're bringing somebody. Someone's coming from the factory. Got to install that. We'll
then
have
you
got to
ask them, is this because it's me? Is this normal for you to have someone?
I told them I know Patrick Norton. They were very interested.
I feel mocked, and I should.
No, I'm not mocking you. If you want to watch this show, we do it every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. I'll sit up. 3 p.m. Pacific. Like, hey. If you want to watch this show, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC every Saturday afternoon. We got a live stream. Twitch.tv/live. Is Mixer back? We were having some trouble with Microsoft's Mixer stream. We had to turn that off. It was breaking the elemental. But normally we're on Twitch, Ustream, Mixer. What am I missing? I feel like I'm missing some. Oh, YouTube Live. But the easiest way is if you go to twit.tv/live, you can pull down some. And there's also two audio streams. So you can listen in audio, you can watch in video. If you do either of those and you're doing it live, please join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's in this new high-fidelity format called text. It's amazing. Amazing. It's so crisp and clear. It's just incredible. You can be the kids in the, right there, the wiseacres in the back of the class talking about the show you're watching. And we like it too because we get some of our best ideas from the chat room. If you can't watch live or join, I should mention, we have such a great studio audience today. If you want to be here in the studio audience, that's easy to do. Wear your cowboy hat and your big boy shoes. And no, you should email tickets@twit.tv so we put a chair out for you. That way we know you're coming. And if you would just like to do it on your own, at your own pace, at your own leisure, just the best thing to do is download the shows. You can get audio and video from our website, twit.tv/NSS. You could never do that on the screensavers. Comcast wouldn't let us. They said no more than 10 minutes. That's it. We can give you the whole show.
It was a different age.
It was a different time. It was a different era. You can also subscribe.
It was the best of times.
It was the worst of times. It is now. You can subscribe and it comes free and it's just sitting on your phone for your perusal at any time, whenever you got a moment. You can even, and I love this now, thank you to Echo and the Google Home and all these smart assistants, because you can listen to anything we do. You just ask. You say, Echo, I want to listen to the screensavers, and it'll just start playing. It's an amazing thing. What a world. What a life. Times have changed. Since you and I were young men. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
You see, go on.
You sure you don't want